Hi, good morning, everybody. It's so good to be with you. I can't tell you how excited I was to come to MOPS PCC. I've been here, I think, probably at least 4 years in a row, and the fact that you keep inviting me back just, like, makes me so happy. So just thinking of prior times when I've been in this room and people that I would see, I love it. And even as I've been walking through this cancer journey in the last year, like, I know that there are women from your church that have been praying for me, so it means a lot to be able to come back here and say thank you for that. Like, it really meant the world. And so let's jump in. Could not tell you what a better opening for everything that you guys just did too. Like, beautiful. So congrats, leadership team. That was a phenomenal way to start the morning. These two pictures are from me last April 2021 and then April 2022. The long hair, I do miss the long hair. The one where I'm with my hand up, that's the last day of chemo in April of this year. Thank you, yes. So really crazy because I think I was here in this, I don't remember if I was here in the fall last year or if I was in the spring before. But when I was here, I did not know that I had a basketball-sized tumor growing attached to my ovary. And so I just thought it was like my body shape, and then I would shame myself about too much Halloween candy and everything else, right? But turns out I went in for an elective breast reduction surgery back in November. And after that surgery, when I couldn't pee after the surgery, they're like, if you can't pee, you need to go into the emergency room. And this was, we were in Pasadena for an outpatient surgery. And I'm like, it's still COVID. Like, I don't want to go to the urgent care at midnight, but I can't pee. And so I got to go in. And I went in, and that's when the gal's like, yeah, your stomach's protruding. We want to do a scan. And she comes back and says, yeah, we need to talk to an oncologist. Like, she has totally just cut me up big time up here. And it's like, you're going to like do like another surgery right now? Like, what are you talking about? So came back home, live in Costa Mesa, found a local doctor. He's like, the bigger, the better. He's like, you know, this is actually, like, I see this all the time. I see grapefruits, I see volleyballs, I see baseballs. This happens all the time. And so we're not really worried about it. And so before Christmas, I go in and he comes out, or he calls my husband in the middle of, at the end of surgery, and he says, you know, the ovary was dead. It actually had twisted and there was no blood supply. And so we took out the mass, we took out the ovary, and like 98% chance no cancer. So we're like, cool, done, all done here. No. A week later, he calls and says, found cancer through the pathology report. We're going to do 6 rounds of chemo. And when you're done with that, we're going to go in and take everything else out and make sure that it hasn't spread. Ovarian cancer stage 1 is when it's in one ovary. Stage 2 is when it's in both ovaries. Stage 3 and 4 is when it's spread beyond that. And so I'm like, well, what stage is it? And he's like, we don't know because we didn't test anything else that was in there. So after chemo, he goes and takes everything out. I still am not skinny. I'm like, there's nothing left. Like, come on, can a sister get a break, right? I'm like, maybe it'll come, maybe I'm just gonna be like, it's inflammation, it's still inflammation, right? Like 5 months later, I don't know. But yeah, so it has been a crazy year, right? And I would imagine you've had your own form of a crazy year in the last year. I'm gonna share a little bit about what God has taught me through all of this as I talk more deeply about the theme that we have. And one of the things that cancer showed me is how important the community was that I developed in my MOPS room. And it was such a great opening just to set the stage through the movie and through just the other experiences. And you'll hear it from your mentor moms in a couple weeks too. What happens in these rooms, ladies, I call it a sacred space. I call it a sacred space because it is not like the playdates that happen on mom's nights out or at the park. It's just not. There are conversations that happen at these tables that change us. That change us as moms and women and friends and wives. And I think it's just a sacred spot. And I had no idea 12 years ago when I came into a MOPS room how much the friendships that I was developing over coffee, like legit, I came for coffee and childcare. Like, I was like, there happens to be a bunch of women, kind of like you were saying. I mean, I'll deal with that. But, you know, and it's like, it's completely transformed my life. And so, I'm not going to promise anything, but I'll tell you the invitation is there if you want to take it. This is me. Which way am I pointing? There you go. This is me on the left. That is the MOPS veterans panel that happened at my MOPS group at Mariners a couple weeks ago. And so we had some of our mentor moms on there who get this, have been involved with MOPS for 35 years. 35 years. And like the stories they tell about what it was like when they were there are the same stories that we're telling, you know, from my generation. And then the one on the other side is me speaking last fall. Had the boobs, had the tumor, had the hair. I missed the hair. It'll come back. It'll come back. But what a difference a year makes. And so when I share with you my story, it's not because I just want to sit here and think about myself and talk about myself. It's because I want you to make connections in your own story. I want you to think about where you are today in your life because I want you to pay attention to this time next year. And I want you to be able to see what God has done in your own life. If you were here last year for your first day of MOPS and you've like been in MOPS for a year now, I hope you can notice some ways that you've changed and it's impacted your life in the last year. If you're brand new, you're gonna see a year from now, your life is gonna be different because of the things you hear from the stage, the things you hear at the table, the conversations you have that are one-on-one. It's going to be different. We are in a season right now when we have little kids where life is changing so much. Our kids change. You can see it in our kids. It's so evident, right? A one-year-old to a two-year-old to a three-year-old, like it's massive shifts. And we don't always notice the massive shifts that are happening in us, but they really, really are. And sometimes that can make us kind of unbalanced because we're like, wait, I don't know who I was. I used to be a career woman or I used to have, you know, showers more regularly. Like there used to be a lot of things that happened right before the babies came. And it shifts when you have more than one child or you add a third or whatever it is. There's so much change going on. And I think that when we can pause and just say, gosh, you know what? What is going on with me? How much has changed? Let me give some credit for the growth or the healing or the work that I'm doing or the ways that I'm showing up that I didn't used to show up. Like, we don't always stop. I know we stop to criticize ourselves. At least that's my narrative a lot. But how often do we stop and just give ourselves an attagirl of like, man, I'm doing this thing. I have no idea what I'm doing, but I am like raising these kids. and they're good, right? When my kids were little, they're now almost 10 and almost 13. My youngest girl, I started MOPS exactly 12 years ago right now because this Sunday is her 13th birthday, and it was that weekend was her first birthday when I started MOPS. So it is literally this week, 12 years ago. I can't believe she's going to be a teenager. It blows the mind. But I'll tell you, there's something about... you talked about how we can be hurt in relationships. We are healed in relationships too. And I'll talk more about even how being a mom heals us and the wounds that we have too. So this theme, we go together. I love the MOPS theme every year. I feel like they're always dialed into exactly what we want to be talking about and what God is stirring in my own heart. I really like this idea of better together though. It's not just that we fit together, it's that we are literally 1 + 1 = 3. Like, it is exponentially better when we journey together, when we talk together, when we're honest with each other, when we encourage each other, when we share our tips and our tricks and what worked, and when we share our failures, when we share, like, it just didn't work out. And we can sit next to each other and be like, that's okay. You're human. You're able to be a mom and be human. And we'll try something else, you know, and maybe that will work. That's just part of the journey of us figuring this all out as we go. Even though we might have read all the books, there's no book, somebody said this at MomCon, there's no book that tells us how to be the parent or the mom to our kid. That's the book we get to write. It's not a book that we can read. So we're all making it up as we go with our kids, right? So there is this is some of the language that MOPS has written. And I didn't bring my paper up, so please hold while I step over here and read the screen to you. I love the stuff that they were, oh, this is the verse. This is the verse, that theme verse for this year. Some men came carrying a paralyzed man on a mat and tried to take him into the house to lay him before Jesus. When they could not find a way to do this because of the crowd, they went up on the roof and lowered him on his mat through the tiles into the middle of the crowd, right in front of Jesus. When Jesus saw their faith, he said, "Friend, your sins are forgiven." Luke 5, verses 18 through 20. So maybe you guys have heard this story before. So this is way back in the, you know, in the early years where Jesus is teaching in a town and people are hearing that he's healing people. And so these guys, they're a friend of this man who's been paralyzed. He can't walk, he can't do anything, he can't provide for his family. And they hear about this guy in town that's healing people. And they're like, dude, we're gonna take you over to Jesus. Like, let's go meet this guy. They're talking about him. They bring him over, they walk over, and there are so many people at the house trying to get healed by Jesus and hear the teaching of Jesus that they can't get to Jesus for their friend to be healed. So they climb up on top of the roof and they pull the tiles apart and they lower their friend down in the middle of it right in front of Jesus. I'll mention one other thing. The thing that Jesus said is, friend, your sins are forgiven. The first thing out of Jesus' mouth was not, walk. You're physically healed. There are things that Jesus does in our life that are not about the physical healing. I am so grateful that I no longer have cancer in my body. But that is really not the miraculous story of what God has done in this cancer journey. It really is this thing where these women that I met at MOPS, that we were all part of the same leadership team when we were in MOPS together, that's my stomach when we found out I was gonna have the surgery. And they came over the minute I asked them to. And they prayed over me, and it was the modern day version of taking the tiles off and bringing your friend before Jesus. We do that in this room in a million different ways. And sometimes there will be healing, and sometimes there will be restoration, and sometimes it will look different than we want it to. But the thing that you can count on is that there will be soul sisters that will bring you to Jesus. And they will stand with you in the midst of it, even when things can't be fixed. They can't always be fixed. But this is a safe place where you can bring whatever it is that you are struggling with, because even though we can't fix it in your marriage or in your finances or in your relationship with your parents or whatever it might be, even though we can't fix that, we can be with you in the midst of it, and I'll tell you, that's everything. That's everything. And when you look at what our world looks like since COVID, there's a lot of people who are more lonely than ever. They don't have someone to walk with them in the little things and the big things of life. And what you have here is a room of women who are willing to do that with you. You just have to decide if you're willing to let them in, you know? And so I'm forever grateful for these women and the ways that their love to me healed me in places that I don't think I would have ever known how to open up myself. I'm gonna tell you a little bit about my story. And the reason I talk about my story is because I didn't always have language to describe my story. And I think if we don't understand our stories, we can repeat our stories without realizing it, we default into that. You may have noticed that in your parenting already. You were gonna not do things how your mom did it or how your dad did it, and all of a sudden you're like, I am my mom right now, or I just said what my dad said. Like, we're like, oh my gosh, like, how did that happen? Even though we were so sure we were never gonna do that. It happens all the time. You see it all the time where cycles repeat themselves. And so I think it's so valuable for us to understand our stories, because nothing brings out our story like kids, like, for sure, right? I never knew the anger that was deep down inside of me until my kids pushed those buttons and revealed the things that I could no longer control and manage, right? And they were little people that wanted to do what they wanted to do, and I could not control and manage them anymore, and I was faced with myself. And so part of my story is the wall. The wall represents the walls that I put up around myself to keep myself from community. I had those walls for decades of my life. And I had so much pain. That little picture, that little girl, that's me when I was probably in about the sixth grade. And when I was in the seventh grade, my mom passed away from cancer. Now, mind you, I'll bring these two stories together. My daughter was 12 when I got my diagnosis this last year. I was 12 when my mom passed away from cancer. And I turned 50 this year. And my mom was 50 when she passed away. So my childhood and my current life intersected in a way that shook me to the core. And it also brought me to the core of where there was pain that I have shoved down for so long that I would have never known how to open up for healing. And at the time, I did not like it. I mean, I was mad at God. I said some things, and I think the anger that I never let out when my mom passed away finally came out, and I think that was healing and important. But it has been a really crazy journey to see how God wants to redeem the things that we think could never be redeemed. Like, how does a little girl who's 12 years old and loses her mom find healing and a deeper level of wholeness and understanding herself when she goes through her own cancer journey? Like, that's crazy. That just doesn't even make sense. And yet, that's my story. Like, I don't understand it. I don't even totally know how to articulate it yet because I'm walking through it, but it is absolutely what has happened. And so when I look at those pictures, though, too, I see the tears. I was so sad and so angry for so long. I did not know how to walk into a room and show up as myself. I showed up who I thought you wanted me to be. I showed up who I thought you would think had value or worth or was likable. I didn't know me, and I didn't know how to be me with you, so I certainly didn't know how to be me with God. And those thorns represent how prickly I was. I was super offendable. I was super, I was stuck in comparison. I was stuck in shame. I would walk into a room and I would look at the girl who I thought was the most competitive and I would shun her and push her away. I would always do that. I was always walking in and trying to figure out where do I stand and how can I make sure that I have a spot here. I never walked into a room and said, how can I make sure there's space for everybody? I never did that. And all of that was out of pain. It was all out of pain. It wasn't because I was a mean and terrible girl. It was because I had so much pain that it was leaking out, and I did not know what to do with it, and it came out sideways. And so part of the reason why I say this is there might be places in my story where you're like, I can relate to that. That gives language to me. That gives language to what my story has been like. And I want you to know that it doesn't have to be like that forever. Like, we change all the time. We get to change. We can choose to change. And some of the things that helped me change were books. Before I had the ability to talk to people about what I was thinking and what I was feeling, I read books that gave me that language. And I was like, oh, now I understand. That's how I feel. That's how I think. And because I didn't have a lot of healthy people in my life, I could read healthier people than me in a book, and they could be a mentor for me. I'd be like, oh, that's how you have relationships. Oh, that's how you handle conflict. That's how you repair after a rupture in a relationship. I never saw that modeled by my dad. My dad was a functioning alcoholic who still doesn't deal with emotions. I didn't know how to do any of that stuff. And so in emotionally healthy spirituality, I know that your church offers that course here, or at least it has in the past. That some of those books and those courses that were small group led that gave me skills and tools that I didn't have helped me learn how to begin healthy relationships. Part of my story is all that pain that I shoved for so long, I needed something to push it down for me, and I used alcohol to do that. And part of my story is that I'm a recovering alcoholic. And so I went to AA to learn how to do life on life's terms and not just drink over it, whether I had a good day or a bad day. I literally had no skills on how to function in life. And so I had to have these teachers along the way. And I saw this card up in Cambria, this Flossom. Maybe you guys have seen this. Flossom is an individual who embraces their flaws and knows they're awesome regardless. Anybody Flossom in the room? It took me a long time to be able to say that I'm Flossom. Because one of the biggest things I work with my therapist, and the couch represents my therapist, is that I don't accept the fact that I'm a human that has limitations, that has weaknesses. I still am such a performance-based default person that I always want to look good. I don't ever want to show the weakness or the limitation or the shortcoming. I don't want to do it to my kids. I don't want to do it to my husband. I don't want to do it on any stage. I always want you to think, no, she's got it together. And so for me to be human and say, no, this is the truth. This is where I'm weak. This is where I'm limited. This is where I'm insecure is actually really good for me because I'm embracing my humanity. And I can tell you, you know what? If any of you relate to that, let me tell you, our kids do not want a perfect mom. They do not need a perfect mom. And a perfect mom does not exist. But if you try to be the perfect mom and they see you put that pressure on themselves, what is their natural response to that? I got to be a perfect kid. But they know they can't be a perfect kid. They understand their humanity sometimes better than we do.
The best thing we can give to our kids is the example of a healthy human who has strengths and has weaknesses and can embrace them both. Because there is no way to get away from the fact that we all have strengths and we all have weaknesses, but we're lovable in spite of it, right? That's kind of a new concept for some of us, yeah? It's not what we always think about. And then those are my girls. Those are my girls on my birthday last year when they were just celebrating me and allowing them to see me. Those are the ones who know me. Those are the ones who I show when I don't have it all together, and they love me anyways. And that has been the most healing, those have been the most healing relationships in my life, because it's where I got to practice to see if all this is really real. And so when I say that we're hurt in relationship, but we're healed in relationship, those are the ones who've done it for me. I was at a study last night, and they were saying, you know, the question was, when have you felt unconditional love? And I just started crying, because I'm like, it's these girls. It's these girls. That's what's done it. So this is my girls when they were little. That was when Sophia, my one who's going to be 13 this week, that's when she's about 3 and Sarah is like 6 months old. It was when I had two kids that I had one for each hand, but I was still outnumbered, right? Some of you are in that stage right now. That was when the anger came to the surface and I was like, okay, I can't, books aren't enough anymore. And I got into therapy, and I've been there ever since. And he walks me through how to deal with all the stuff that's coming up that I don't have tools for. And I'll tell you, I am so glad that I went into therapy back then and that I'm still there. Because let me tell you, the teenage years are a trip with girls. So during this whole cancer journey that we went through, my girls were amazing, but they suppressed everything because we were in survival mode. It was like chemotherapy, recover, schedule the next one, have a surgery. I mean, it was crazy town. We just buckled down and went through it. And the emotions are just coming to the surface now. And at the same time, so are her teenage hormones. Oh my gosh, it's so much. It's so much. And I will tell you, thank God I have a relationship with a therapist who can guide me through this now. And I learned at MomCon a couple weeks ago too, okay, this will blow your mind. So when I'm parenting my 12-year-old daughter, it triggers the 12-year-old in me that comes out. It's like a biological thing that happens. I never knew this before, but it explains so much. So keep that in mind. If you experienced trauma at age 8, at age 9, at age 6, whatever it might be. Maybe it was a divorce. Maybe it was the death of a loved family member. Maybe it was a cancer diagnosis in your family. Maybe it was a medical diagnosis with you. Maybe it was some kind of abuse. Whatever it is, the age that you are, the age that your child is, will trigger you at that same age. We need to be aware of this. We need to be aware of this. Because when my 12-year-old fights with my 12-year-old, this is not a healthy situation, you know? And so it's like, thank God I have a way to like figure out what of this is me, what of this is her, what of this is cancer, what of this is hormones, and whether or not I even need to know that. Sometimes Tim is like, that doesn't matter. Let's just figure out what you're supposed to do in this situation, right? Because I don't know how. And so I give that to you because that blew my mind. And I feel like, if you already know that there's some places in your story that are not resolved, you know, and you want to get them resolved, the sooner you do that for yourself, the better for you and for your kids, because it will hit you in the face. It will hit you in the face whether you want it to or whether you're ready to. And there is no ability for you to suppress it strong enough, because it becomes an invitation for healing and wholeness. And that's really what God wants for us. And I heard something last night too. Whatever our wounds are, do you know what the healing is? When love is bigger than the wound, that's where healing happens. When the love is bigger than the wound. And this is the thing. God's love is always bigger than the wound that we will, any wound that we ever experience. God's love will always be bigger. But we don't always let that love in. We don't always open ourselves up to let that love in. And I think what I've walked through in this last year has absolutely been him putting that love in. So 2 weeks ago, we're doing some art at my house. I homeschool them. And my oldest daughter writes this letter to herself. And I find it the next day. And I said, Sophie, can I share this with the moms? So this is what Sophia says. God bless her. Sophia Carmen Casillas, this is you when you were 12 and 11 twelfths. because she is 1 month away from being 12. I want you to know that you are very special. I love you so much. When people, Sarah, who's her little sister, when people, as in Sarah, are mean to you, fight you, or make fun of you, I want you to know that it will be okay. I will always love you just the way you are. Perfect-ish. We're all about the ish, but still awesome. Again, I love you so much, always and forever. Sophia Casillas. And that's a picture of her when she was 6 weeks old. You guys, is that the sweetest? I read this and I was like, girl, I didn't tell her this, but I'm like, you're healing me. You're healing me. Like, what would my letter to my 12-year-old self have looked like? What would I have said? And I just started thinking about that. And then I have to just tell you, her side notes on the right here, her side scribbles say, Sophia, yo, sup. Hello, sup, yo, dude, Sophia. So she's mini me, kind of deep, kind of hood. Okay. But this is what I'm going to invite you guys to do. You guys have a handout, and if you need extra paper, we can find a way to get you that extra paper too, but this is my invitation for you. I would like to invite you guys to write a letter to your younger self. You can do it at any age you want to, and you can, when I did it for myself, I just wrote, I think I wrote like, dear sweet one, or something like that. Like, I didn't put an age. I didn't do an age. And so if you need extra paper, I'll walk around and give you some paper. But I'm going to ask you guys for a couple minutes just to write a letter to yourself. You're not going to share this. This is totally for you. But take a couple minutes to do this, and I'll come around with paper if you need it. And then I'll come back.
give you about one more minute just to kind of wrap it up, and you could always come back to this letter. I really appreciate that you guys dug deep into that and are really like writing and participating in that. I think that's a gift to yourself. I think it's a gift to your kids. I encourage you to keep doing that, to continue just to write letters to yourself and see what comes up. See how that connects who you are inside, right, at different ages with who you are now. I think that that's such healing work. And I think that when we do these types of things, it helps us show up in all of our relationships in different ways. And I know doing this work has helped me to take even the conversations that we would have like here in a MOPS table, that deeper conversation. Now I do this type of stuff with all my friendships. And so the picture up here is are some friends that I've met in other areas of my life, like some of my homeschool mamas, friends that I've had that are beyond MOPS, that now we have this deeper kind of friendship because what we're doing here and what we're learning here and how we're learning to relate to each other, where we're encouraging and speaking life to each other and calling each other higher into the people that we want to be and just speaking love to each other, it's not designed to just stay in this room. It's designed to go beyond this, right? To change us on deep levels. It's not just for Tuesday mornings. It's not just for this season of life when you have little ones. It's to really transform how we engage with everybody because I think it's life-giving for all of us. So this We Go Together theme, you guys have heard those three big ideas: be unoffendable, show up, and expect good things. I love this that MOPS said. And this is one of the things that wasn't read yet, but let me read this over you. This year, we will be people who do things, not people who talk about how others are doing things. We'll offer help more readily than we offer criticism. When we feel judged or criticized, we'll assume the best. If we mess up, we'll ask for forgiveness. We'll learn from each other and surround ourselves with people who are different from us. Instead of dwelling on our insecurities that cause us to huddle together, we'll dismantle the cliques that make us feel safe and look for ways to make others feel included. Everyone is in. Everyone is welcome. We'll be teachable, uniters instead of dividers. When I read that now, my soul says, yes, yes, let us be women like that. But I know when I came into MOPS, that is not who I was. That is not the way that I looked at friendship or how I knew how to do friendship. And so now that I can see I've got these soul sisters that came through MOPS, when I came in, I was sabotaging really all of the ways that I might develop those friendships. And so since some of you guys are new to this, I just want to throw this out there and tell you the two things that were the biggest hindrance to me creating the relationships that I so desperately wanted were comparison and fear. And these are things that I still struggle with because shame has been such a huge part of my story. I can still fall into these things, and so I have to really still work at this. But comparison, and how many of you guys are brand new to MOPS this year or in the last year? Okay, welcome. Oh, I love it, I love it, I love it. So you guys have never heard these stories, but some of you have. So when I came into MOPS my very first year, I would come in, and I had one kid at the time, and there would be a line for breakfast like you guys have here, right? And by the way, thank you for potato casseroles. I don't have those now that I'm not at MOPS, and that I beelined for that because, yes. When my girlfriends get together, we still have MOPS breakfast every now and again. We bring the kale salad, we bring the hash brown casserole, and we bring all the egg dishes. The French toast one, yum. So when I came in, I was so insecure. I was still super wrapped in comparison and shame. I wanted to be the best mom ever for Sophia, but I put such unrealistic expectations on myself, and I criticized myself. I was so afraid I was gonna jack this kid up, right? And like,
You saw her letter. She's not totally jacked up. She's going to be just fine. But I remember I would have a bad mom day, right? Like maybe Sophia, I yelled at Sophia because I wanted to be on time. Or maybe I forgot her diaper. Or maybe I, you know, forgot her snack. And like, what kind of mom forgets a snack, you know? Like for me, that was just a horrible offense. Like someone might call Pete, you know, the child protection services on me or something like that, right? Because I put that pressure on myself. I didn't realize that happens to all moms, right? Like we're not even sleeping. Of course we're going to forget things every now and again, right? But I had no grace for myself. And so if I came into MOPS on a day when I had had a bad morning, I'd get in line for breakfast with you guys, and I'd look around, just like I mentioned, and I would start comparing your outsides with my insides, right? That's what we always do. We never really compare apples and apples. We're always comparing things that have nothing to do with each other. So I would look at you and you'd be smiling, right? And I'd be standing there dripping in shame as I just beat myself up because I forgot to bring the snack for my daughter, right? And because I yelled and snapped at her on the way out the door. And I'd start looking you up and down and I would just start making up a story about you. Like, ah, look at her. She showered today. What a life of leisure she has. I bet she didn't yell at her kid this morning because her kid, you know, didn't find both shoes in time to get to MOPS on time or whatever, right? I mean, I would just start making stuff up that's like not even true. And this was always like my go-to. I bet she has sex with her husband like 4 times a week. And we know that that is not happening at my house. And I would be like, she better not be at my table because we have nothing in common and like this is never gonna work out with she and I. Now, mind you, this poor woman, all she did was stand in the line of my eyesight for breakfast, right? But because of the shame and what I was doing internally, all of that leaked out onto somebody else. And that type of comparison that was a constant narrative in my head was always going to create division in my ability to create relationships. I cannot have a soul sister relationship with someone I'm competing against. Nobody wants that friend, right? And nobody wants a friend that's constantly judging everything about them. What I never realized when I was comparing is that when I was constantly comparing myself to someone else, what I was constantly thinking about was myself. I wasn't making space for you. I wasn't making space for your morning or your experience or what was going on in your life. I was so absorbed with myself. I did not realize how selfish comparison is. And when I became coordinator of my group, it was like 3 years into my MOPS experience, and I heard the quote by Theodore Roosevelt, and it says, comparison is the thief of joy. And I realized I can have comparison or I can have joy, but I cannot have both. And so if you relate to that and you struggle with comparison, I'm gonna encourage you to make the choice to choose joy instead of comparison. Because comparison will never get you the relationships that you want. Comparison will never comfort you when you're lonely. Comparison will never speak life to you when you're having a hard day and you need to be reminded of the mom you want to be. It will never do that. And as I've spoken to so many groups of moms, not once have I gone into a room where moms are like, I needed a new group of women to compete with. That's why I'm here. Like, just needed some new women, you know, like I needed some new tables. Like, no, we all are coming for connection. We're all coming for connection. And don't let comparison sabotage that opportunity to connect with another mom. The other thing was fear. I was so afraid if I showed you the real truth about me or my story that you would reject me. That's why it took me 3 years before I ever told my group that I was a recovering alcoholic. I was like, we meet at a church. Like, I don't know what they'll say. Like, they won't think I'm fun. They won't invite me to go out with them. Like, I can't really tell them the truth about me. And that was an absolute lie. The minute I told my group, it changed me and it changed our group forever. And it's still, I can still see the threads of it as I go back now, where I told them the truth about who I was, and instead of it pushing them away like I always thought it would, it drew them closer. And I saw you guys do that this morning. That's what you guys were doing this morning. When you just take the mask off and you're like, this is really what it looks like, we are drawn towards that. We are not repelled by it, right? Perfection is not attractive. Perfection does not exist. It's unattainable. To be friends with somebody who's perfect makes me feel like I'm messing up all the time. I would much rather be friends with somebody who's real, and we can encourage each other to like be better at what we want to be better at. One of my girlfriends that I showed you a picture of, we Marco Polo'd. She lives in Oregon now. We Marco Polo'd all day long during COVID when we were in lockdown. And I would tell her, like, I just lost my mind on one of my kids because I'm a recovering yeller. And I would tell her, I'm like, I just lost it. And I remember one time I was like, and I'm not even sorry. I would do it again. I was so lit up, right? And so by the time she marks back, she's like, I totally get it. You know, she's laughing at me because, you know, she loves me anyway. She knows, right? And she's like, and you know what you're going to do? You're going to apologize to her. And you're going to tell her that you lost it. You're going to tell her that she's loved. And you're going to repair it. Because when we were growing up, our parents didn't repair that. But we do. And she reminded me, like, you're going to make mistakes. I don't expect you to be perfect. I still love you. But remember, we do it better now. Right? We do it in a healthier way. That's what we need. But if I'm so afraid to tell you what's really going on in my life, you'll never be able to speak life into me about it. And I'll keep repeating the same patterns. Whereas if we can be honest with each other, we can encourage each other, right? So don't let fear or comparison get in the way of what you guys are forming here, because it'll mess with you. And so I call this the sabotage circle. For me, it would be that negative self-talk, and then I would withdraw. Negative self-talk, I would withdraw. So I wake up, or I come in, I'm criticizing myself in line, and what do as I criticize? Not only do I tear you apart, I pull myself away from you. I better not be at her table, right? That sabotage cycle will keep going, and that circle will keep going and going and going. So what happens is, I have a bad day, I walk in, instead of just naming it and being like, you guys, I'm having a bummer of a day. Like, it's just the reality, I just needed to tell you that. I don't have to tell you all the specifics of all of it and be a downer at the table. I can just be like, I'm having a rough day. And then you guys will remind me, hey, I'm glad you came. You know, let's get some coffee. Would you like another donut? Go for it, right? Or whatever. And then I can break it versus it having the power. Because if I come in and I just sit there and then I withdraw and I'm like, well, I don't want to talk because I'm in a really grumpy mood and I don't want to be grumpy because then they won't like me. So I'll just sit here and be quiet. And because I'm in such a negative mood, I'm going to have this like resting face that doesn't look super friendly, and they're going to be like, well, what's up with her? And they're going to be like, well, she doesn't really want to connect. And I'm like, well, they don't want to connect with me. And really what I'm doing is I'm creating this whole buzz of stuff that's all started in my head. And then what happens when I go home? See, I can't go back. I don't relate to this table. Like, they don't want me to come back next week. Does anybody relate to what I'm talking about? Is this just me with my crazy? Or, okay, this is what we do. This is what we do, and we got to stop it. Because the connection circle says, if I can connect with myself and be like, you know what, the truth is, I had a bad morning. You know what, I just yelled at my kid, I feel really bad about it. I forgot the snacks, I forgot the diaper, whatever it is, like whatever I'm saying, if I can just throw that out there and be like, you guys, you know what, this is what I just did. So I'm just gonna like drink an extra cup of coffee and then I'm gonna chill out. But like, can we just laugh about something? Can we change the subject? Because what's going on in my head is a little crazy town right now. Can I just listen to you tell me a story right now? Right? Like, get out of myself, connect with myself enough to notice what's happening, but then to kind of get out of myself too. Then I can engage with you guys. I can stop that narrative. And then I can connect with you. And then I feel better about it. And if I say, hey man, I had this mom fail, you can be like, we don't talk like that about each other. No, you had a human mom moment. You didn't fail. Fail is part of life. Like you just you made a mistake. Big deal. You know what I mean? Versus me sitting there like, I suck as a mom. My kid's gonna need therapy. I can't make friends. Like, right? That whole narrative just keeps us like pulling back and pulling back. But if we can just connect with each other and connect with ourselves, then we create this thing where, gosh, you know what? I had a really meaningful conversation at the table this morning. I can come back to MOPS next week. I wonder what we'll talk about then. Isn't it a totally different dynamic? And so if you relate to some of that and you find yourself in that circle and you're doing the competitive, you're doing the negative, you're doing all that, just stop it. Literally, just stop it. And whatever that looks like for you, maybe it means you're going to go to the bathroom and like shake it all off and come back and like reset. In our family, we do the reset button a lot. We just are like, okay, reset, clean slate, everybody, let's go with their, you know, pissy attitudes and we start over, right? Like, what do you need to do for yourself to kind of get back in a place where you're like, okay, you know what? I'm gonna let it go. I'm just gonna let it go and I'm gonna start over and I'm gonna come in fresh, you know? You have to figure that out for yourself. Otherwise, we get stuck in these cycles that do not serve us, do not serve us well at all. This is something else that MOPS wrote that I just love. This year, We are going to come together as friends and show the world the remarkable things that God can do. And as we do, may you find sisters who will help you do what feels impossible. May you find boldness in your purpose and comfort in being known. May you find ease in dealing with people who would normally annoy or offend you. And may you find yourself at home in any room you enter. And may you say yes to the new things God wants to do in your life. That's what we're invited into. That's what we have the opportunity to find and to practice here. And this picture, this is that picture of me on my last day of chemo. And that's the back of a shirt that I wore a lot during that treatment. And it says, word on the street, everything's gonna be okay. And I wanna remind you, like as Mandy Arioto, she's the president of and CEO of MOPS International, she says, I'm here from the future, because her kids are older now. I'm here from the future. My kids are almost 10 and almost 13. Your kids are gonna be okay. You're doing the work to love them well and guide them well. Your kids are gonna be okay. And just like Sophia said, it's gonna be okay, even when it's hard. And so keep doing the things that will help you show up as the healthiest version of yourself, and it will benefit you, it'll benefit your friendships, it'll benefit your marriage and your mothering and your Tuesday mornings. And I think that this is where you have an invitation to practice all of it. And so I leave you with that and a discussion question for you guys. And I think you have a couple more on your handouts. But my favorite question is for each of you to pick one thing that you want to remember from this talk. You don't have time or space to take 27 things home and try to implement them. That will not be helpful. But if you took one thing and you shared it at your table, what that does is, A, it has you go through your memory of what we talked about, and you're like, you're reinforcing key things that stood out to you. When you say it out loud, you remind yourself of that thing, and you also remind the other women at the table. The other thing is it connects you to the women at the table. When you say something and someone else is like, yeah, that really meant something to me too, then you guys have a connection of like, oh, that's right, I thought she just was perfect and never, you know, had anything that she needed to learn about, right? Like those comparisons that we do. It cuts through all that stuff too, and it creates connection. So that would be one thing I would encourage you all to answer, and then if you have time, answer the rest. But that's pretty much what I have for you guys. Thank you. Thank you so much.